From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we speak with attorney Dan Kovalik, who is in Caracas in Venezuela. He was working, running around yesterday following the election in Venezuela, which was won resoundingly by the party of President Nicolas Maduro, the Socialist Party, the Bolivarian Revolution, in essence, was ratified again at the polls yesterday in a pretty lopsided, actually, result. And it's not going to be reported that way here, of course, in the United States, but Dan's going to tell us what actually happened because he is and was there. Dan, welcome, first of all, and thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you very much. So I am here as an observer, an official observer to the elections. There's over 300 observers here from various organizations. The United Nations is here, the EU, the Carter Center, the Jimmy Carter Center, to observe the elections. And I've been here doing that. I actually drove with my small delegation to Aragua State, about 2 hours west of Caracas, to observe polls there yesterday.
So, first of all, just so our audience is aware, you know, we have a lot of times, you know, folks, college kids, whatever, they're interested in getting the truth, you know, directly from the horse's mouth, so to speak, about what goes on in other countries during their elections, rather than from the American press, which misrepresents what happens even here in front of their eyes. Dan is a little more experienced than that. An attorney, spent some time. What do you practice in Pittsburgh or in that area?
Well, yeah, I retired from the steelworkers after 26 years as a labor lawyer.
Yeah.
And I've been observing elections in various countries since 1994. Okay. And I've actually observed almost every election in Venezuela since 2013.
Good. And, of course, you've observed elections in the United States, both in terms of political elections and union elections, right?
Yes, indeed.
So not a lot they can pull over your eyes. So what did you see? First of all, what were the results? Let's start with that.
Well, or let's start with what this was all about. So this,
okay,
this is, we would call this an off-year election.
Right.
The president was not up for election. The National Assembly or Congress was not up for election. These were regional elections for governors and local leaders, mayors. And there were 87 parties, 87 political parties that ran, and 70,000 candidates. Pretty incredible. And the big news was that the Mood Party, which had been the main opposition party and which had not participated in elections for some time, they did participate yesterday. And so with about between 41% and 42% of the electorate voting, which is more than the average number of voters who vote in off-year elections in the U.S.
Right.
As you say, the governing PSUV party of Nicolas Maduro won. They won the governorships in, I have to do some simple math, 16 of 24 states, meaning the Mood, again, that main opposition party, which has been a darling of the United States, they got 8 out of 24 governorships. So
a third.
Yes, yeah. And so the PSUV certainly won, as you say, resoundingly. But I think it's also important to point out that, you know, the very hardcore opposition party participated and won a third of the states. I mean, and so the point being that at least when you look at the results and you look at the level of participation on its face, this seems like a legit election. And I think, in fact, that it was. You know, we have to, first of all, understand that Venezuela has one of the best, if not the best, electoral systems in the world. And you don't have to take my word for that. That was Jimmy Carter who said that.
Right.
In 2012. They have a very elaborate system. First of all, they have a unitary system throughout all 24 states, unlike in the U.S., right, where every state has their own system, right? You remember the hanging chads in 2000 in Florida, where they were the only state that had those chads. So there's a unitary system. It's a very elegant system, and I'll just walk you through it real quick. And I witnessed it in practice in Aragua State yesterday. So a voter comes in. First of all, they find their name on the rolls outside, and they find which table to go and vote in. And they walk in. They show their ID. So this, you know, the Republicans would love this. They, you know, they require ID. And in addition, they have to put their thumb on top of a machine that registers their thumbprint.
Right.
So you don't even get to vote until that happens. So this really guarantees one person, one vote.
Right.
You then go over to a machine, which it's a secret ballot that has a covering around it, so no one can see who you're voting for. You mark the candidates you want. And that is registered electronically, but also you get a paper receipt. And then you walk and you take that receipt and you drop it in a box in the center of the room. And that receipt and the receipts collected are later audited. Actually, about, I think, 54% are audited the very day of the election to try to, you know, match up the number of paper receipts with the machine, so that, you know, there is a reliability that we know that the machines are accurate because they match up with the paper receipts,
right,
or they don't, or whatever.
Right. Right.
And then the person, after dropping that paper receipt in the box, walks over to a table and gets ink put on their thumb so that they cannot vote again, right? Because it shows you've already voted. And that's it. Again, this is a very great system. Again, Jimmy Carter lauded this system. He said that out of, I believe, 92 different countries he had visited, that this was the best in the world. It's the same system he had been looking at. We'll see what the Carter Center says. They're here in the country, too. Jimmy Carter's not himself. He's a bit too old now. But in any case, and again, those are audited. 54% are audited by the end of the day, and they're audited at the local centers by witnesses from all the parties who want to participate as witnesses. And I saw witnesses there from the MOOD, the opposition party, from other opposition parties, from the PSUV. So it's a great system. And by the end of the day, And this is now final, I believe. It looks like, you know, again, 41 to 42% of the electorate voted, and the ruling PSUV party of Nicolas Maduro won 16 of 24 states.
So, just for people to get a little context, I just took a quick look at the. We had an off-year election here in the United States, of course, this year also. Earlier this month, and here in Westchester County, New York, which is one of the more affluent counties in the United States, and theoretically a more active voting population than the norm in the United States, and the turnout here in Westchester County was about, there were about 150,000 people that voted in the county out of a population of 1 million. So if you figure, even if the registered voters among 1 million people in Westchester County, which does not have a large under 18 population, by the way, it's a more mature, quote unquote, demographic here, that you're talking maybe 30% turnout maximum compared to 40 something in the elections in Venezuela yesterday. And you know, it's one thing to vote in a place where you have mass transit and computer infrastructure all over the country and everything else available, like is in the United States. But there are actual physical challenges to voting in some countries that are, for example, under sanctions for 10 years by the United States. And yet the turnout was larger than here. So in terms of that argument about the validity of the election is certainly more valid than the election in the United States on those grounds.
Well, yes. I mean, and that's what kills me, honestly. I mean, because you often hear Nicolas Maduro is a dictator. It's not a democratic country. I just honestly don't even understand the argument. And, you know, I was just, you know, just as an anecdotal thing, there was another observer here from an African country. I believe he was from Mozambique. And he's actually, most of the observers on my team are from their own electoral commissions in their own countries. So these are experts on electoral systems.
Right.
And he said, oh, this system's incredible. It's much more, you know, reliable than the one in Mozambique. And again, that's what Carter's view was, that this was an amazing system. And what people have to understand is that when Hugo Chavez was elected in 1998, and it was a surprise win for him, you know, one of the things he and his party set out to do, a big thing, was to really improve the democratic functioning of the country. And they did so through their 1999 constitution,
right,
which was ratified by the population and which is still governs the country and which, you know, ensured this very good electoral system, which has been developed over time.
Yeah, I want to amplify that, because it actually not just ratified by the population, but it was developed by the population too, right? There was a long process of what do you think should be in your constitution? And first, a public education campaign. What is a constitution? Just a whole process that, you know, this thing is I can't think of an analog in terms of a constitution that's as representative of the population as that one.
No, and it was, yeah, it was done in these local constituent assemblies. It was done at the grassroots level.
Right.
They drafted the Constitution. And by the way, it, for the first time, you know, recognized peoples that had been invisible in this society. Afro-Venezuelans. Maybe people don't realize there's a huge African descendant population here. There's a huge indigenous population here. Those were invisible peoples before the Constitution of 1999. And that Constitution now recognizes the rights of those people and and guarantees their rights. So it's really an incredible thing. And again, the attacks on the democratic system here are just unfair. And it's funny because the only election that the United States recognizes as free and fair in the post-Chavez years is in 2015.
Right.
Because that's when the MUD, the opposition party, won the National Assembly.
Right.
So if the people vote the so-called right way, then it's free and fair. If they don't, it's by definition not free and fair. Well, that's not exactly how things work.
Right.
But, you know, that is the view, of course.
What was cute, too, was about 30 seconds after the victory in 2015 by the right wing, by the MUD. MUD is, I guess, how it's pronounced there. Actually, it's to an English speaker like myself. It looks like mud, right? M-U-D.
Which is so funny.
No, your name is mud.
That it's a party that is very backed by the U.S. that they have an acronym that spells mud.
Your name is mud. I know.
Hysterical. It's hysterical.
So the first act that they did was to try to basically accomplish a constitutional coup. They tried to force President Maduro out of office rather than wait for the next election. And that was about the only thing that they did other than try to restore some property rights of some of the rich people that had been, you know, facing some economic justice with the Chavez and Maduro administrations.
Well, that's correct. And we even have to remember even more dramatically in 2002 – you know, the same grouping of people that make up the MUD actually overthrew Chavez,
right?
Had him kidnapped, taken to an island. And the very next day after he was deposed, Pedro Carmona, who declared himself president, he went on TV and said, this constitution, you know, the one we were talking about, right, it's gone. And the Supreme Court is gone. And the National Assembly is gone. In a moment, he destroyed every democratic institution in the country. Yeah. And, of course, the New York Times applauded this,
right,
as a restoration of democracy. That's, yeah, how insane this is. And, of course, let's remember Chavez returns to power because the poor in the barrios in the mountains surrounding Caracas came down and they demanded he be returned. And he was returned within about 2.5 days. But so we see the nature of this opposition. It's not a loyal opposition. It's considered a disloyal opposition in the sense that they don't want to work within the democratic framework. They want to destroy it. Right. But even still, you know, they're tolerated and allowed to run in elections, and they'll have three governors very shortly.
Yeah, so, you know, don't try that at home, folks, that coup attempt, by the way. I mean, what happened in April of 2002 compared to what happened on January 6th in the United States of 2021 – and look at the reaction from Washington and from the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN and MSNBC and who knows who else. And Democracy Now, by the way.
Right. They're terrible. Oh, by the way, I misspoke. I got my numbers wrong. So the Pesci V won 21 out of 24 governorships. So right. The Mood won 3.
Said 8 before. I got you. 1/8. No, yeah. I understand.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah.
Right.
So, okay. So, good. Yeah. Well, good. Even better. I mean, that, you know, 2-1 victory is one thing, 8-1 or 7-1 or whatever is another. And that's, I guess, what we're talking about here. So, there's also, you know, the question of Juan Guaido.
Who holds no office.
He's not even in the National Assembly anymore,
He holds no office anywhere and hasn't for several years.
Right.
And the U.S. just unilaterally declared him president.
Right.
And said they were going to, recognize him as president, which on its face may seem, well, it could seem silly. It could seem innocuous, but it's far from innocuous because what the U.S. has done, they declared this guy who never even ran for president.
Right.
To be clear, it's not like he lost under a cloud or
right.
something. He never ran for president.
Right.
So they declared him president, and they have given him over
billions.
Venezuela's resources.
Yeah.
They gave him Citgo, right? You may drive around and see a Citgo station.
Yeah, I used to go to one. I don't go anymore. There's two of them in my neighborhood.
That's Venezuela's.
That's right.
Was Venezuela's number one source of revenue. It was their U.S. oil and gasoline company. They got their most revenue from any single source from Citgo. The U.S. stole Citgo from Venezuela, gave it to Guaido, and now they're threatening to just break it up. That is to say that Venezuela may never get that back. Their single biggest source of revenue. Meanwhile, they have gold, over $1 billion of gold in the Bank of England.
Which they also took, right?
Yeah, they asked for that back.
Right.
And the Bank of England said, oh, we can't give it to you because Juan Guaido's present. So this is just nothing but imperial theft. And there's been some corruption scandals of Juan Guaido that the monies he's been given, have been used for fancy hotels and fancy clothes. This guy, no one supports him. Can I be clear? By this time, no one, not even in the opposition, supports him. And yet the U.S. continues to cling to him as their top quisling in Venezuela.
He didn't even run for governor or even mayor of anything.
No, he represents no one and nothing. Yeah.
So meanwhile, let me ask a question, okay? When they seize the state assets of Venezuela, the people's money of Venezuela, and they hand it to Juan Guaido, we're talking about lots and lots of money. I mean, Citgo is worth billions, okay? Yeah. That makes him maybe one of the richest guys in the world. Where is that money, actually? Who really got it? Because I'm guessing he didn't.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think it's not known for sure. and that will be a huge scandal. But what we do know is the Venezuelan people are not getting it. That revenue was used as national revenue for things like building homes here, which the Maduro, Chavez Maduro governments have built over 3 million, I think now 3.5 million housing units for the poor.
Public housing.
Public housing, virtually free. It was being used to eradicate poverty, eradicate extreme poverty, to provide kids with that education, provide people with health care. That revenue, what we do know, is gone. It's not being used by the Venezuelan government and therefore by the Venezuelan people. In fact, for some time, there was about 17 months or so, I think, that because of that and the U.S. sanctions, Venezuela had virtually no revenue. Okay, can you imagine
that? Yeah.
And people have suffered.
Yeah, no kidding.
And that is the purpose of all these things, of this economic blockade, is to make people suffer. I actually got a chance to hear Nicolas Maduro speak the night before the elections. And, you know, he mentioned the fact that the U.S. blocked shipments of vaccines.
Right.
And COVID treatments to Venezuela. Can you imagine during a worldwide pandemic, the U.S. going out of its way to deny people vaccines and medicine?
It's amazing. It's amazing.
This is a war crime.
Yeah.
It's a
crime against
humanity. You're targeting the civilian population, and yet the U.S. claims it somehow cares about the Venezuelan people. I mean, it's a cruel joke, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I think the question of where the people stand on on the SUV and just generally the existing Bolivarian government in Venezuela, I think that's been settled again. Looking forward, and I just can sidetrack for a second to contextualize. I like to do this every time we do because people don't really understand what the hell this means in the real world. There's about just shy of 30 million people in Venezuela, or about 8.5% of the population of the United States. They built, under sanctions, in the last 5-7 years, whatever, 3 million new public housing units in the entire United States. There's less than 1 million public housing units remaining. It's about 980,000.
Yeah, well, and by the way, so the goal, the total goal is to build 5 million housing units, which they'll reach that goal, right? Yep. And they'll reach it fairly soon. Yep. And let's put that in context. So let's assume an average family of four per unit.
Right.
Times 5 million. That's 20 million
out of
less than 30 million.
Right. So that means about 2/3 of the people are getting brand new apartments under sanctions, under a global lockdown of their economy, basically.
Right. And I've been to these places. They're nice places. And there are some. So most of these are being built by the government. There's some where these communes are actually given the construction material, and they're building their own homes. I mean, it's incredible what's happening here.
Yep.
And so if you provide housing for 20 million out of less than 30 million people, you basically eradicated homelessness, right?
Because,
a lot of people have housing to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's really incredible, and they get no credit for that whatsoever.
And no cash.
And no cash. And no cash.
All right. So anyway, so my question that I diverged from, that we got about 4 minutes too. What next? I mean, there's no question now that the people support the government in their country. The opposition has begun participating in the electoral process. So, I guess to start with, what does the opposition press look like this morning? Have you had a chance to look at it yet?
Yeah, of course, they're poo-pooing the election because they're claiming there was low voter turnout, you know, because 41-42% is low. And by Venezuelan standards, there's some truth to that because they have very high levels of participation here. But again, by international standards or by comparing it to the U.S., it was high, you know. So, but they don't have much to go on. I mean, it's not only that the PSUV that, you know, again, most of the electorate trusts with their welfare. It's also that the mood is very divided amongst itself, you know, because, and in part, ironically, the U.S. did that with the Juan Guaido move, because there are those in the mood who support the Juan Guaido move, though less now than before, and others who have always opposed it. And there's a real division within that party, whether, again, even to run for office, whether to participate. And they're at each other's throats. So, you know, it was as much about the mood's disorganization and infighting as anything else. And that's their fault.
Right. If you had a unified opposition that had a program that was a way out of these sanctions or whatever, that was both believable to people and not an obvious threat to them, those candidates might have a shot at winning some things. But that's not what you have.
The problem is, Don, that there are significant elements in the mood that support the sanctions.
Exactly. I understand
all
of that.
And the polls, not surprisingly, show the people overwhelmingly oppose sanctions.
No kidding.
You know, well, yeah, not surprisingly. And also oppose, by the way, foreign intervention, which a lot of people in the mood support.
Which is that's exactly what a good part of the mood is, as a matter of fact. And that's the point. And on top of that, by the way, just to mention, the opposition to Juan Guaido among some of those members comes because there are at least two that I know of characters who think they should be Juan Guaido.
Well, of course. And again, truthfully, if anyone was going to be picked to be this shadow president, as he is, he was not even in the top 10 in line.
I mean, he's an obvious puppet.
Again, it caused this real problem in the mood, because you had people who had been running for office, who had won office, who had been governors, etc.
Right.
And so, you know, this the U.S. move to pick this guy out of a hat. It was as destructive of the opposition as anything. But of course, the U.S. thought, and it looked for a short time in 2019 that it might work. They thought that they could do this, and with the sanctions and other provocations, essentially topple the government and put Guaido in. And that was not a crazy, you know, prospect at the time. I mean, there was a moment it looked like that could happen. So they were willing to take that chance.
Right.
But it didn't work, and it won't work now. And so now what they've done is destroyed the unity of the opposition, such as it was.
I mean, they made a play, basically, to put someone in that was totally under their control, totally their creature. He had no base whatsoever, no constituency representing him, no independent power. You know, it's like Harry Truman, or it's like Kamala Harris. You know, they're placed in that position by power, and they are totally beholden, and so they went for it. It failed. And now we had this election. I'm glad you were there to see it and to talk about it. And we've got about 30 seconds if you want to wrap it up.
Yeah, first of all, I'll say, incredibly, though, Guaido, who is a traitor, who is a treasonous individual, right, who's stolen billions of state money, and acted as president in a very, you know, real way in terms of dealing with other countries, he's still walking around free in Venezuela, right? Okay, that says a lot about the Venezuelan government.
Unlike that guy with the horns in Washington, D.C. on January 6th.
Exactly. He's going to be sitting in the can for a while. But also, if I could, if people want to learn more about Venezuela, they could get my book, The Plot to Overthrow Venezuela, which is available in bookstores near you and on Amazon.
Dan Cavallo, thank you so much for your time and for your work.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.